This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Vampires, zombies, ghouls, and creatures from outer space. No, it's not Federal Parliament. It's Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Universal Monsters Are Forever. Welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream, episode number 110. So welcome to the show on Joy 94.9. Now, that track was Running Up That Hill by Placebo. It came out, this version of the Kate Bush, marvelous Kate Bush song, back in 2003, and it's from the Vampire Diaries soundtrack to the original TV series. So tonight, mayhem, miracles, macabre, and monsters. To celebrate 100 years, the 100th anniversary of one of our most favourite studios, the Universal Pictures Studios, we salute all the wonderful, the dark, the grotesque, and the frightening of their monster pictures, their monster movies. Things like Dracula, Frankenstein, The Wolfman, and many, many more. Now, that was the Universal theme tune. Who can't forget that before a lot of great classic movies? Mitch is here.
I am here, everyone. Hello.
And I'm Sonia, of course, and this is Sci-Fi and Scream. It is Tuesday the 24th, and on the 30th, April the 30th, it is 100 years of, I was going to say Marvel, but no, close enough, Universal. Now, we're going to be looking at films like, of course, the famous Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein.
Can I play it? Can I play it?
Which one are you going to play?
And that was me this morning waking up, Sonia.
It's alive. It's alive. Of course, that's Bride of Frankenstein. And that's the amazing actor Colin Clive doing what he did very, very well. He was in both Frankenstein films, the first one, 1931. And that one came out in 1935 with Elsa Lancaster with that awesome shock of grey hair. You can go to our Facebook page to have a squiz at that.
I think it's pretty trendy.
It is.
The hairdo. We also have coming up later in the evening interview with Conrad Bodman, and he's the curator of the Gaming Masters exhibition coming up later in the month, I think.
In June, actually. So awesome. Starts June the 28th at ACME, or known Australian Centre for the Moving Image. ACME's easier to remember.
It's a really good exhibition about a lot of the gaming history.
Heroes.
Yep. Yeah, and I think the logo is even Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, it is. The Sonic Hedgehog creator is going to be here in Melbourne. So hopefully we will get in there and get an interview with us, himself, and some of the other creators of, you know, brilliant stuff. Even Sing-Along. Is it Sing-Along?
Sing-Along? Yeah. No way.
Yeah, and the creators of Sims. So even those sort of games are going to be represented. There's 125 playable games. We're going to be busy in June.
I'm not going to be the only person that says this. Like, The Sims, I loved The Sims. And there's a language called Simlish, I think.
Simlish, oh.
Simoleon or
is
something like
Simtex?
That.
Syntax?
No.
And similes?
They talk like, Simpson, the boo-boo-doo-wa. Like, oh,
right,
they're having a really interesting conversation. And so Sonia and I will be going to that also, I think. And then we can give you guys a review of what's happening. And it'll be here for a while.
Yeah, to October.
Yes.
Nice.
But for now, we will be listening to a lot of the things from old movies.
Universal Monsters.
Universal Monsters.
And the background. Ooh. In the background. Universal monster movies are not complete without the sound of a wolf.
It's true.
It's true.
We'll be talking about the Wolfman later on as well.
Ah, which version?
Which one? So you have to listen in and find
there
out.
There are two. I quite like the 2010 one, but nothing beats the 1941.
One more time.
So if you like hairy men, you should stick around and stay listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. And you can always SMS us and tell us if you have a favourite Universal movie that dealt with monsters. There's a busload, or not a busload, there's probably several aircraft loads full of awesome films. You've got ones that starred, of course, Boris Karloff, Colin Clive, as we mentioned before, the famous and one and only Bela Lugosi, of course, is Dracula, and Lon Chaney. I mean, a lot of these guys appeared with each other in so many of the different films. It was almost like a revolving door. One minute they would be in, say, Werewolf of London, and then Lon Chaney would be Igor or something in Bride of Frankenstein, along with Bela Lugosi, who played a mad gypsy man. But then he turned around and he was Dracula, you know, in the original Dracula film. So crazy times, and they were very, very busy people. So more of that very soon. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Charisma Carpenter, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on 94.9.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. And this is Sonia.
And Mitch.
And Mitch. Now we are going to have the news tonight, Sci-Fi and Squeamish news. And I'm going to be doing that, filling in for Emma. She'll be back next week. Yahoo. Looking forward to that. Now, back to Universal. A Universal story. The origins are 100 years ago, on the 30th of April, a rebel filmmaker called Carl Lamali founded Universal Pictures as part of his campaign against the then dominant film industry. Mm-hmm. Now, he called the original film industry the film octopus, and he could see their tentacles getting into everything. So to make his own films, because he thought Nickelodeons were going to go somewhere in 1908, he decided, no, I'm going to do my own films, and we're going to bring films to people that are called feature films. So he was the first guy to come up with that actual concept. And back then, a feature film would be something that was longer than 20 minutes. Now, prior to 1912, prior to Universal Pictures, movies weren't very long at all. 10 minutes, 12 minutes, maximum was 18 minutes. People got quite bored. Now, we do go on about attention deficit today, but seriously, back in the turn of the century, people were just pretty lazy, and they wanted to see a lot of action and special effects. So along comes Carl Lamali, and despite threats from other cinema outlets and production houses, he joined up with people like 20th Century Fox and Paramount, and those three movie greats, of course, great studios. Moved from there. And today, Universal is still the oldest surviving studio of its kind. And that's in the world. So the first one, of course, is the French film studio Gaumont Pictures. Then it's Universal, and then it's Paramount. So that's the origin story. Now, they were a rebel back in the day, but they probably are considered like one of the biggest corporate-owned cinemas. They are actually owned by a corporation, and of course NBC Universal, and there's many, many offshoots of that and satellite companies. But I think I love them and remember them especially for the monster movies, because they were awesome magic. And on a Saturday afternoon when it was hot outside and you had no friends to play with, I don't know, the Frankenstein movies, the Dracula movies with Bela Lugosi kept me company.
Now, talking about these kind of scary movies, I'm going to start at the beginning. They've hit some of the best kind of the themes, like Dracula, Frankenstein, Werewolf Man as well. And the vampires really started there. And I'm going to say, like, Dracula is one of my favorite ones. And they've also hit some superheroes. Like, I think they did The Invisible Man and Flesh Gordon and a couple of them. And looking at Frankenstein in 1862, it really began as the man and the monster. or the Fate of Frankenstein. Then in 1910, Edison Studios produced the first Frankenstein movie, and then 1915, it was made again as The Man with No Soul.
Goodness.
Life Without a Soul.
I'd like to see that version.
Well, no known copy of the film has survived. But
damn it, nitrate, you see.
Unreliable sources say the film is in an anonymous private collection.
Oh, I wonder who's got that.
So there's someone sitting around like, hee-hee-hee.
Thomas Edison, back from the dead, perhaps. I've always wondered about
George
that.
George Lucas. He has it.
Yes, the man without a soul. No, I didn't mean that. Seriously.
And then 1931, Universal Studios kind of came in with the Frankenstein movie. And then in 1935, because of its massive
popularity
and the success of it, of villages running and killing and fire, they created Bride of Frankenstein, which was kind of like bringing back this guy.
Did you say Brad of Frankenstein?
Bride.
Oh, sorry.
Bride. His
wife. I want to see Brad of Frankenstein.
Bobby and Ken remade.
Reanimated.
And then after that, Universal Studios made a kind of monster rally of films, which were Frankenstein Monster, Dracula and the Wolfman. So it'd be like Frankenstein meets Wolfman and House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula, Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein.
Everybody's meeting Frankenstein.
I know. Like,
did Shirley Temple meet Frankenstein? Because it was the Depression and she was in so many other movies. I think she was at a different studio. That could be why she never met Frankenstein.
I don't know. Maybe someone got high and ran into Frankenstein. Frankenstein.
Dear.
In Centrelink.
Robert Hayes wouldn't like that. Of course, you've got the Hayes situation. Robert Hayes was the man who decided, we've got to censor things. Now, the Hayes office censored Bride of Frankenstein, believe it or not, the 1935. Yes, because Americans were, you know, still had that puritanical thing about themselves, and basically the script had to go through several different rewritings before it was accepted. So that's why you see a version, or you see a scene where the little girl's by the lake and she's passing a flower to the monster.
Oh, spoiler I remember
alert!
That. Yes.
Spoiler alert!
Yes.
But we never see what he does to the little girl.
Oh, that's
because,
true.
Spoiler I thought it was alert, just like, he kills her, obviously.
I didn't know that. Like,
the camera pulls away and all you see is the little flower, I think, falling into the water.
What made me lol?
There's no thrashing about.
Was like the monk who teaches him English or something, and the monk's like, I'm blind and I don't know. And then these
guys... With that voice.
Yeah, and then these guys just jump in and set the house on fire. And bring like, God, why? Brad, friend.
Brad? You mentioned Brad again.
Brad again.
Hey, we've got messages. Jerry is at the front desk, and Grant from Gordon says hi to both of us, and he's going into the drawer. And there's another one. Oh, you read that one. It's for you.
Hey, Mitch, it's Haley. Just thought I'd let you know I'm listening. Hey, Haley.
Who's Haley?
My bestie, I guess.
Oh, your bestie.
My new bestie.
She's been on Facebook with you, hasn't she? You can go to our Facebook site. How can people do that, Mitch? Do you know?
It's on facebook.com/ /sci-fi and Scream.
Because we've got a pretty picture there now.
Now, I really need to play this trailer. This is for the Abbott and Costello, one of the monster mashups from Universal Studios.
Count Dracula sleeps in this coffin, but rises every night at sunset. Chick is right. This is awful silly stuff.
Come on, take it all out.
Now! Look out, Chick! Come here! What's the matter? Come here!
Wait a minute! The nation's top comics, Abbott and Costello. Petrified, but hilariously. Plus the dangerous and terrifying Wolfman, played by Lon Chaney. Plus that fiend out of a nightmare, the vampire Batman Count Dracula, played by Bela Lugosi. Plus the most dreaded creature of them all, the Frankenstein monster, played by Glenn Strange. Plus a couple of luscious but designing females in the spookiest laugh fest on record.
Wind.
Water.
Heart.
Sci-Fi and Scream.
Sci-Fi and Scream.
On Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. All about the monsters in our life. Our lives. It's alive, it's alive. Now, that was Head Over Heels, that track we played before by Digital Daggers, again from the Vampire Diaries. Lots of cool stuff happening with that show. It's coming to Australia. Look, I know it's been on Australia TVs, but some of the people in that show are coming here in June, I think it is.
Ooh.
You look excited. Your eyes have gone all dilated.
Whoa. And now what are we going to be listening to? Who's the interview? Conrad Bodman.
Conrad's the man. Conrad Bodman is the man from Acme. Sounds like a kind of a superhero or a sleuth of some sort. And he is kind of, because he's put together or helping to put together an exhibition event that's going to be phenomenal, and it starts June 28th. So I reckon we should have a listen to that. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. To Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, Conrad Bodman. You are, I believe, the curator of Game Masters.
Game Masters.
Game
nice.
Masters.
Nice.
And that's the exhibition coming very soon to the Australian Centre for the Moving Image, or ACMI, or ACMI. And it's in June. One of the first questions for our listeners is, how did you begin, well, where was your involvement to begin with this project? When did it start for you?
Well, I've been working on this idea for about 2 years now. I've developed a number of video games exhibitions in the past. We did a big show at Acme about 4 years ago called Game On, which is a sort of survey, a history of video games, which was really, really successful. And I was thinking of ways to follow up that exhibition. And one of the things that occurred to me at the end of that show was that people really didn't know who made games, you know, who the people were that were behind games. You know, people have got a big awareness of the history of video games over the last 40 years, but not many people who work in the industry are really known by name. You know, we know our big artists, we know our big filmmakers. You know, who are the people, who are the legendary people that make video games? There are a number of people that are out there that have been working for many, many years and have built up big portfolios of work. So I really wanted to kind of flag them, name check them, and talk a little bit about the process that they go through in terms of coming up with ideas, developing their games, and the teams that they work with who are so important that they surround themselves with. So that was the whole notion, really celebrate auteurship in the whole world of video games, and to recognise that video games have got a long history now over the last 40 years.
Yep, true.
And that a number of people have floated to the top. And it's quite strange in a way because, you know, whilst the video games industry really celebrates its great names, if you go to any big industry event, you know, like E3 in Los Angeles and so on, all of the great names in the video game world are there and talking at professional events and so on. But very few get the name check on the box, you know. I mean, there are a few that differ, like Hideo Kojima, the very famous Japanese developer who always has his name on top of the box. And I guess the British developer Peter Molyneux is pretty well known, kind of outside of the field. Big names like Will Wright, the father of the sort of sim game kind of genre, and Shigeru Miyamoto, who's the sort of creator of Mario and big influence at Nintendo, of course. They're now recognised as major stars, you know, in the golden age of Hollywood and so on. That's when it all happened, really. I think exhibitions like Game Masters and the Art of Video Games at the Smithsonian really sort of recognising this and, you know, beginning to understand that this area needs to be kind of studied and archived in a probably in a new way. You know, we're not talking about painting and sculpture here, we're talking about software and hardware.
Yes,
and
very,
you know,
accessible.
Yeah, it's very accessible.
Everyone, yes.
But there's also the whole area of you know, social networking. You know, you've got games like Bejeweled and Farmville and so on.
Yeah,
you know, all these and a lot of the online Scrabble games, puzzle games, all that kind of thing, like seem to be very mixed sort of demographic. So I think it's going to be a really interesting kind of show to just check out the audience and see who's coming. You know, I think it's going to be quite a mixed show, but we're doing a number of, I think a lot of the live events are going to address that whole girl game kind of area. We're doing a lot of kind of more industry kind of focused events which look at kind of women in games and women in the industry and so on, which is quite important.
Yes, I'll be doing an episode or two about that. looking at that, women in games. I did one recently, Women in Comics, so looking at women in underground comics and genre stuff, and it's starting to balance out. It's really interesting. Well, I did read something recently about pay parity in women and stuff like that, just quickly. Basically, it seems to be that, you know, they're starting to get women into computer science and computer in engineering and stuff like that, and I think that's going to certainly change the environment in the future.
Yeah, I think it will.
They're directed
definitely
that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely changing. I mean, that's our intention, and so we'll more on that kind of that we'll announce as time goes on. But it's very exciting. Yeah, it will be touring, and I think it will be great success.
Fantastic. One last thing: if you had to choose, what game?
God, that's so hard, really. It's sort of, where do you start with this? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
you've always had a love for games, obviously.
I have. I mean, I sort of write a little bit about this in the book that we produced to accompany the exhibition, but I'm from a place called Reading, kind of in England, which is just outside sort of satellite town.
Isn't Kate Winslet from there?
She is. How did you know that? How did you know
Trivia
that?
Trivia Pursuit.
Kate Winslet and Kenneth Branagh, yeah.
If you've got a Trivia Pursuit game, I'll probably play it.
Yeah, they were part of a really amazing kind of theatre company in Reading. Anyway, I didn't hang out with them, but I hang out in this arcade called the Crystal Rooms, which is part of a cinema, like an Odeon chain of cinemas in the UK. And that, I really, games like Defender and Asteroids and Pac-Man they're really part of my upbringing. But so I'd have to say, like a game like Asteroids, you know, sort of vector game, you know, from the late 70s, is really important to me.
The Humble Oscillator, wasn't that the Pong?
Well, it did. That's right.
It was sort of with that.
Yeah, it was this computer called the PDP-1, which was a sort of research computer that a lot of these early arcade developers had access to in sort of research labs, particularly at MIT.
That's
MIT. That was where it all started, really, kind of in the late 60s. And I would say, you know, games started in the labs, kind of moved into the arcade, then moved into the home. The Acme website will take you to the Game Master's kind of microsite. You can find out all the information about the show there, where to buy tickets. You can download the ebook that we've produced, the free game, and you can find out all about the people that we're including in the show.
Great. So, is that up already, the ebook?
That's not up yet. We've got a kind of landing page at the moment, so the main website's coming out kind of around the beginning of May. So
exciting. Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you again for coming on to Sci-Fi and Squeam.
That's a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Hope to see you perhaps a Thursday night down there chilling out, playing some Asteroids or something.
Yeah. You bet.
Yeah, cheers.
All right,
thank you.
Thanks. Cool.
Good evening and welcome to Sci-Fi and Squeam News for the week ending April 24th, 2012. I'm filling in for Sci-Fi and Squeam's intrepid news reporter Emma, who couldn't be here tonight. So here we go. Agent 13, a sci-fi adaptation with Charlize Theron and director Rupert Wyatt, is attached to this one, are preparing for an intense bidding war amongst studios. However, it seems the project has indeed found a home. And, no surprises, Deadline Online reports it's Universal, number one. They have beaten out rivals Paramount, MGM and 20th Century Fox to secure the high-profile project. With Rupert Wyatt's blockbuster of last year, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, having done so well critically and financially, things seem set to go stellar, with the gorgeous Charlize Theron headlining. And of course Charlize will be seen soon, in June, with Ridley Scott's Prometheus. Now, Agent 13 will not be Wyatt's next film, however, as he is locked in with agreements with Andy Serkis to reprise his role of Caesar for the Ape sequel. That puts the project in front and centre of the director's plate. Now, Agent 13 is based on a comic book graphic novel series by Flat Deal and David Marconi that ran from 86 to 1988, with a unique blend of sci-fi elements and noir. The comic novel series centres around a male lead, which has not yet been cast. Agent 13 definitely looks like one to watch, but no details yet of an expected release date. Now, there is something out there that you might want to do this weekend of a dystopical nature. Well, are you interested? If you are, and you're a Mad Max fan, you should get yourself and your friends together and other car enthusiasts and fans of the iconic Mad Max franchise and head to St Kilda, to the Memo Theatre, in fact. Go and check out the original motorcycles and cars used in the 1979 cult Australian film of Mad Max, and it's screening at the St Kilda Memo Theatre on the 28th of April. That's at Ackland Street. All details are on our Facebook page, so go to it, rev yourselves up, you petrol heads, head to Facebook Sci-Fi and Squeam, and enjoy a classic dystopic mayhem movie with Mel Gibson in the good days. Now, speaking about Mad Max and apocalyptic events, Blender.com has reported today that Aussie supermodel Abby Lee Kershaw has just joined the cast, seeming to replace I Am Number 4's Teresa Palmer, who pulled out of the production as delays dragged on and on. This will mark Kershaw's acting debut, but it's unlikely she's going to be asked to do much than look tragically beautiful, slightly dirty, and stand in a cage. I doubt this is going to be a Hunger Games for an older generation. More like a trip back in time, best forgotten, where women were kept in cages because they were dirty women. Now, director George Miller has taken decades to try and get this, the fourth film, down on celluloid of his post-apocalyptic bunch, but it's been plagued by so many delays. Many have announced starts and backfalls, and the production at the moment of Mad Max Fury Road is on hold. That's too bad. Now, looking at a bit of controversy to date, Ender's Games writer, author Orson Scott Card has made a bit of a bluey in recent days. Yes, His Majesty of CypherCon, the millionaire author of Ender's Game, is apparently, from reports on the web, is a homophobe. He's a member of the National Organization for Marriage, and he has published some pretty homophobic rants, including the following, where he says, "Regardless of law, marriage has only one definition, and any government that attempts to change it is my mortal enemy. I will act to destroy that government and bring it down so it can be replaced with a government that will respect and support marriage." That's from Orson Scott Card, the writer of the very popular YA sci-fi book, which is going to be made into a film, Ender's Game. Came out in 85, the book did, and it's going to be another big blockbuster. Now, that's from Geeks Out, that report from John O'Jarrett, and that's a community report devoted to connecting LGBTIQ geeks of sci-fi online. So it's an interesting blog. Check it out. Go to our Sci-Fi and Squeam Facebook page and check out their mission statement for gay geeks. Right. Think we're done.
I have to say, like, he's a bit extreme.
Apparently he's a devout Mormon. It's a real shame.
What can he do to
I don't know.
Stop people?
Well, he wants to bring down a government. He's mentioned it three times in that paragraph.
What can he do? I'm going to bring it down.
Bringing it down.
The last thing I do.
All the good people. All right. Well, that's it for the news for the week. April 24th on Sci-Fi and Squeam.
I hope Emma can come back in next week.
I hope so.
Emma, come back. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Squeam. This is Joy 94.9 with Sonia and
Mitch. So looking at the crazy spin-offs that Universal Studio did actually make, after like the whole Wolfman meets Dracula and Frankenstein runs down the street to buy groceries
from Dracula,
Dracula
doesn't like.
Dracula gets a job, and they kind of in 1942 they made Ghost Frankenstein, and then later made. Earlier than that, sorry, in 1936, they made Flash Gordon and then Dracula's Daughter.
Oh.
And so Dracula's Daughter is obviously about Dracula having a daughter. And she...
Oh.
She, Sonia, you're really enjoying
it. I'm looking at some of the titles here. There's one that was in 1943 called Captive Wild Woman. And then a few years later, 1 year later, it was called Weird Woman. Another movie called The Climax. I'm wondering, What's going on here?
Well, Dracula's daughter, actually, you were saying earlier,
yeah,
was mainly, has like a lot of lesbian innuendo.
Yeah, I think it's based slightly, not just on Bram Stoker's Dracula, so they say, but it's also, made in 1936, by the way, but it's also got a little bit of Sheridan Le Fanu's Camilla in there. And I mean, look at the poster. Well, you can't, because this is radio, but if you saw the poster, the tag is, she gives you that weird feeling. Dracula's daughter.
And this is something from the movie, so you can kind of get an idea what kind of movie it's about, or what kind of movie it is.
You like jewels, Lily? This is very old and very beautiful. Please don't come any closer.
Yes.
Don't come any closer.
It's because Lily doesn't like jewels or older women.
Or older women with roving hands. Yeah. Look, it's based on Bram Stoker, like we said, but I think the screenplay was done by a contemporary guy at the time, Garrett Fort. Had a little bit of fun, I think. A little bit of fun there.
And later, Dracula's daughter goes on to fight space brains.
Oh, I'm just
in the sequel,
blown away.
Dracula's daughter versus the space brains.
Like, the space brains.
Yeah, how does she get, or maybe space brain, but how does she get into space? Maybe the space brain comes to her?
I'm not sure.
Well, she's one tough lass, I can say that
she
much.
She certainly is a sister of the Fang, and yeah, look, I'd love to see the movie.
Well, moving on to more of the great Universal movies, we've got Wolfman. Wolfman was a great movie of its time, and it's developed into, like, you know, the werewolf stories,
yeah.
Werewolf in, like, London, Werewolf Eats Pizza, Werewolf and Dracula.
American Werewolf in Paris, London, Munich, Werribee.
Werewolf tourist.
Well, Werribee. Where? Like werewolf? Werribee. It must mean something like that.
Further on to Twilight, where there's a werewolf. Like,
oh,
come
the
on, guys.
Wolf pack. They're shapeshifters, by the way. They're not werewolves.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that,
I didn't
you?
Know that one.
Technicalities,
and actually,
you know?
It's a funny story because now they've got a lot of things in schools where people join wolves.
To look out for werewolves.
No, they join, like, wolf packs and they believe that they're werewolves. I mean, it's
sad.
It's kind of similar to in American high schools how, like, some people think they're vampires and they drink blood. Well, these people
then
think they're
up.
Werewolves and they just dance under the moon, like, naked or something.
And are they hairy?
No. I doubt
they
it.
They stick the hair on. Do they with glue?
I don't know what they do in the
Velcro.
Moon. Velcro. So tell me about the Werewolf Man.
The Wolf Man. 1941. American werewolf horror film written by Kurt Siodomak and produced by George Wagner. He also directed it. It's got Lon Chaney in it, as core, of course, as the Wolfman. And Bela Lugosi appears as, I think we mentioned before, as a gypsy man. And Maria Ospenskaya.
I don't know who that is. I'm sorry.
She was actually considered in the 1920s. She was like a what they call a seer or a clairvoyant. They used to travel around, a real charlatan. And she even got to Hollywood and she gets a little speaking part as a crazy old witchy gypsy woman.
Is she the one that turns around, or is that
she's
the
one in the trailer?
Those are people that do become a wolf.
Yeah, she's a bit out there, but she was playing herself, I reckon.
You think? Do you think she went around telling people, you're a werewolf?
I think you can tell it by his eyes.
I had someone tell me that. I don't know why.
Yeah, and the hair on Mitch's back.
Yeah. If you're running late on Metro, some people come up to you and tell you a werewolf, throw coins at you, gypsies.
Do you?
I don't know.
Crystal balls?
I don't know who they were. Let's listen to that trailer for anyone listening who doesn't know much about Wolfman. You can see that it's quite a funny, like, dramatic movie.
Oh, it's dramatic with the strings and the fake background and props and the dry ice machine. It's great stuff.
Here we go. The Wolfman from 1941.
We'll be right back. the way Johnny Williams was killed?
Yes. Find something?
Animal tracks.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
Oh, don't hand me that. You're just wasting your time.
The wolf bit you, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. You wouldn't want to run away with a murderer, would you?
Oh, Larry, you're not. You know you're not.
I killed Bela. I killed Richardson. If I stay here any longer, you can't tell who'll be next.
I want to really learn to scream like that. Ha!
Well, no, don't give up your day job. That was the trailer from The Wolfman. And yeah, Maria Ospenskaya. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
What's that? Is it a full moon?
Sorry, that's just my chair going down. Since we've spoken about Dracula, the track I've chosen is Gorillaz. Dracula.
I don't know this one.
It was something that I really used to play a lot when I was younger.
A lot.
It's a bit of an oldie. No.
Oh, no. You are older than you seem.
Oh, look. If a werewolf bites you, you will become a monster.
Once a month. I pretty much do anyway.
That's called menstruation.
Oh, do you have... Is that what it's called? Nobody ever told me about your father.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Earth.
Fire.
Wind.
Water.
Heart.
Sci-Fi and Scream.
Sci-Fi and Scream.
On Joy 94.9.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9 with Sonia and Mitch.
Oh, woo.
Hello, I jumped in there. Thanks. And we've been looking at the monsters, the Universal monsters of the Universal Studios. Happy birthday, number 100, to all the people at Universal. Thanks for bringing us some of the greatest, corniest, quirkiest, craziest, most inspiring movies in the 1930s and 40s. I thought you were snoring.
It is past my bedtime.
Oh, that's the brains, man.
It is. I really like that.
The groaning zombie. I don't think they ever did a zombie movie.
I know, I was thinking that. I don't think they've ever done a zombie movie.
Universal haven't. Ooh, who knows?
So what's coming up next week, Sonia?
Next week is the Weddenverse, ladies. It's Woman of the Weddenverse. So Joss Whedon's woman in many guises and many, well, not so much disguises. Now, we were to have that episode this evening, but it's going to be 111 next week, next Tuesday, the 1st of May. So to start off the month, we're going to be looking at some of Joss's, female characters that he creates, why he creates them, and why is it so important? Well, I guess tomorrow it's important because there is at least one female in probably the biggest film of the year, and that's The Avengers, which comes out through Paramount Disney here in Australia. Its release is in Australia tomorrow, Anzac Day the 25th. So if you get a chance to book your tickets and go see it, go see it. Let us know what you think. Next week we'll have a chat about that, and Scarlett Johansson and Buffy, of course, played by Sarah Michelle Gellar. We're going to be covering all the ladies, Eliza Dushku. We'll also be having a chat interview with a lovely woman called Emma Beddoes, who's a very big expert in these matters. And yeah, Mitch and I will be here.
Woo! Yeah. And hopefully you will be too, listening in and supporting us. Thank you for listening in tonight.
Thanks for tonight. Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you next week. Same time, same place.
Same bat channel.
I need to hear the wolf.
Ooh.
Oh.
He's a quiet lone wolf.
And we'll be ending the show tonight on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.